Hi, my name's Radcliffe, I'm an addict. Wow, whoa. That felt good, I might do that again. Hi, I'm Radcliffe, I'm an addict. Thank you. Thanks very much to our previous speaker for reminding me too that I grew up feeling out of sorts, uncomfortable and odd. I never felt... talked about fitting in. I didn't feel I fitted in, and all I ever really wanted to do was fit in. And like you, I thought, you know, the cool people were the people that took drugs. And none of the cool people spoke like I did. And it was always a real problem. Hello! I say, could I have some of that? So fitting in was a real struggle for me, you know. When I remember growing up I didn't really grow up, but as a teenager in my bedroom, lost between the identities of Roger Moore or David Bowie, which is a conflict I've never yet resolved. I didn't know how to be. I didn't know who I was, and I found it really scary. But what I wouldn't do was tell you that. I couldn't show that. For whatever reason, I don't care if it's genetic, I don't care if it was conditioning, it doesn't really matter. What I did was I learnt to hide who I really was, and I learnt to project this image, this front, of somebody who I thought was acceptable. And so right from the get-go, I had this bizarre situation where who I really was and what I presented, there was a gap. It's kind of like a sort of, you can imagine an inner core of what I was really about, and then the outer core, and then in the space in between, in order to hold myself together, I filled that void that we talk about. I filled that with an unbelievable concoction of relentless abuse. Drink, drugs, whatever it was. We often hear about people talking about drug of choice. And yeah, all the stories, you know, my drug of choice was yours, more. Anything that I didn't have to pay for. You know, I was a real short change merchant. Not proud to own that, but I was. There were an awful lot, I took a lot of heroin in my time, and I sold quite a lot of heroin in my time. And an awful lot of the heroin that I sold had an awful lot of sugar in it. I think I'm single-handedly responsible for most of the diabetic problems in baby boom generation. No one ever got a habit, I might add. Except me. I wasn't a good guy to hang out with or to use with. I learned to take, and I learned to manipulate, and I learned to steal, lie. I learned all sorts of really useful skills that helped the active addict in me. And unlearning that behaviour, which is part of the essence, I believe, of recovery, has not come easy. And the first bit of that was because I had to stop using. Well, in order to recognise that I needed to stop using, I had to recognise that I had a problem. And like an awful lot of people in this room, I was the last to know. Everyone was telling me for a long, long time. And I didn't want to hear it, I couldn't hear it. Because the reality was that if I stopped and got beyond the obsessional compulsion that drove me, I was just empty, terrified, uncomfortable, and it just didn't seem worth it. Sounds really awful. But that's what I really felt. And, you know, I've got lots of friends in this room, and it's lovely to see everyone, and there are people in this room that have touched my life and changed the way, or helped change the way that I think. Not that anyone can change someone's thinking just by saying, do this or do that. What I had to do was then follow through and actually do things differently. And I was not, I didn't arrive open-minded, willing, and I know this will come as a shock, I wasn't as good-looking and well-put-together as I appear to you now. I arrived arrived in this recovery several years ago, an utter shambles in borrowed trousers, the wrong size. I had a green sock, a red sock, a pair of shoes that I'd, to be fair, stolen out of the detox. And I arrived at a meeting, and funnily enough, Gary, sitting in the front row, was doing the chair. And I had, I was a broken man, is the easiest way to describe it. And he said something so powerful, so simple. Probably doesn't realise the impact, although I have told him. He was doing the chair, and he said about recovery, is my decision is not in my head, it's in my feet. And I looked at my feet, which I was quite ashamed of, stolen shoes, as you can imagine. But I got what he meant. And to me, what he meant, in my experience of recovery, was that it was about what I would do. It didn't matter really what I thought. It didn't really matter what I'd done in the past. It was about what I was going to do about the problem that I had going forward. I was very blessed to be in that room at that time. And without trying to sound like a sort of, you know, Monty Python sketch of we had it bad, I arrived at that meeting. I picked up a white key ring and I left that meeting. I had nowhere to go. I was homeless. I'd come off the street and through jail. You know, I was this feral addict. We'll touch on that a bit later. And I had no friends. I was not trustworthy. If you got near me, practice letting go, was the reputation I had, because anything I could get my hands on, I took and I stole and I sold it, or I used it and I would abuse you. That's what my world had become. I was feral, is the best word I can use. It. My life wasn't unmanageable, it was feral. It was shite. S-H-I-T-E. I hated myself, I hated what I'd become, and it wasn't, you know, I didn't walk into the rooms for the first time and have this fantastic moment of the decision was in my feet, not in my head. I had been via quite a convoluted journey of interventions, which had first started as a teenager, in fact. And I know a lot of you will be looking at me thinking, you know, mid to late 30s, perhaps. hopefully. But no, I'm a 47-year-old man that had spent the best part of 28 years nursing a drug habit. And in between certain breaks. And the breaks would come at points of disaster, points of obvious chaos. And the first time I came to the fellowship, and my gratitude, I have to say, everyone says the most important step is step one. I think that's bollocks. I think the most important step is step 12. Because without people carrying a message through example and care to me, I would not be here today. My children would not have a dad. My ex-wives wouldn't have an ex-husband. It's not all good. But I wouldn't be here if people hadn't persevered and carried the message. Didn't carry me, although many tried, and I let them down. But the consistency of the message, and sometimes that was carried with a smile, a nod of recognition, a welcome, a cup of tea, a biscuit. I know it sounds trite, but without the 12th step, I don't believe I would be sitting here having the privilege to talk about my experience. So I will be eternally grateful for all those that have gone before me that were there at the time I could hear. And that was my problem. I couldn't listen to anybody else's his point of view. I had a problem with arrogance, apparently. I know I had a problem with arrogance because I've been into... I know Gary will want me to be honest. I actually checked into treatment and 12 crisis intervention, whatever, 21 times. And I completed 8 of those. And I still managed to continue using. So I think the obsession, the compulsion ran deep, ran strong in me. It's just the way it was. And I remember once, you know, nursing my denial through yet another detox. And that was a difficult one, you know, but I was in this fabulous house down in the country. Not like home, really. And...
There was always these really lovely people,
and I have nothing but admiration and respect for people that work in the field, and I know there are people here that do, and that's great. But I was always in these nice houses in the country, with, you know, and there'd always be what I would call Melody Touch-Healy person. And she'd have slightly crinkly hair, wonderful earrings, and she'd be really good with her hands. And she would facilitate groups. And there would always be that question mark, you know, Radcliffe, what feelings do you have that make you want to use? And I would be utterly bemused. I'd look at these people, they're all the same in my head. Yeah, I was awake. And that was the deal for me. If I was awake, I was on a mission. There was no... Oh, I've had a bit of a bad day. I never found out if I was going to have a good day or a bad day. Never time. I was awake. Right, I'm on a mission. And to the exasperation of all those that got close to me or loved me, and you know, the real sad part of addiction is that most of it was paid for. Most of my addiction was paid for by the people that loved me. And that, you know, that's a horrible thing to you know. To have to really come to terms, I found it too big a mountain, and my denial was such that you could put me into these places. At this particular time, in this particularly nice house in the country, I was, you know, being challenged. That was great. You could get me into a group, you know. Oh, and I could sort out your problem. Oh, I certainly knew what your problem was. And oh, well, if I wind him up with that, she's got a lifeboat over there, and she'll sort that out. And I could just, you know, obfuscate, mirror smoke, bish bash bosh, and come out of there and use within 20 minutes of completion. Not a particularly successful strategy. And I remember this guy, they gave me what's called a verbal. They told me they were going to save my life. And, you know, I'd come in off the street from yet another sort of outrageous smack habit. And I thought I'd do it differently this time, because everyone kept telling me, you've got to do things differently. So rather than going through detox as this shambling victim, I went through in a blazer and tie. And I managed to convince myself that I was better than everybody else because I was wearing a tie. And why I attached to this tie, it was a particularly good tie, I might add. It doubled as a tourniquet in moments of stress. As they do. And I remember they gave me this verbal to challenge an aspect of my character. It's only looking back I could see this is what they were trying to do. And this was going to save my life. Now, there were people in the room that needed help. You could see that. There was, they had the hospital slippers on, the Bigfoot slippers. You've all seen them. So these people, and I'm thinking, oh, you know, and this lovely lady that she'd have the, I'm not a bad person trying to be good, I'm a sick person trying to get better. And I could get my head around that, and I thought, well, no, you know, this is important, you know, just in my time. And the facilitator of this particular group, and the group decided that the verbal I was going to have was, hi, I'm Radcliffe, I'm an addict, not the pilot, I'm one of the passengers. I'm sorry. Well, it'll come as no surprise. This didn't sit comfortably with me. Certainly not my hideously overdeveloped sense of entitlement that I carried with me. I had brass buttons on my blazer. You know, I was a different breed altogether. I hated this thing, but I said it. I went along with it. And every week they'd have this community group arrangement. And I remember sitting in this thing, and yet again, in front of a room, the same sort of number of people, loads of people. And I'm going, oh, hi, I'm Radcliffe, I'm an addict. I'm not the pilot, I'm one of the passengers. Mutter, mutter, mutter. And the director of this treatment centre said, oh, excuse me. And there was that hideous silence, and I felt like the school kid that had been caught sneaking sweets out of the desk, you know. Rabbit in the headlights, familiar feeling for me. And the bullshit detector's gone off. So early in. This is going to be a test. And this guy challenged me there in the room, and he said, what did you say? Like my father, like the head teachers, you know. Oh, and I just went to that point of, oh, fuck it. Can I say that live? I don't know. Fuck it. And I stood up and I said, my name's Radcliffe, I'm an addict. I'm not the pilot, I'm one of the passengers, but I'm still flying first class. You must. And that inability, I mean, you know, it was just, I wasn't ready. I couldn't be moulded in by anyone in any way. I just couldn't, you know, I was resolute in my point of view. I was entrenched in my isolation. And it didn't matter if I could be challenged. You could challenge me and I could go along with it and be polite in that conversation. Remember the mask I mentioned at the beginning? Everything just bounced off. Nothing really got inside. Because what I harboured was the escape hatch, always. Oh, I'll hack it for a while. If it doesn't work out, I know what to do. I never let go of the belief, the erroneous belief, that to deal with being me in the world required a chemical switch. I did try, not sincerely, but I did try all sorts of... Boy, did I try different ways to live with being me. I remember being taken to Alan Carr, the hypnotist. He gets you off the fags. And someone's idea was, I tell you what, we'll take Radcliffe down there and get him off the drugs. Well, I turned up there and I sat there and he went woozer, 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 whatever he does. And I was a bit agitated. Because I'd been taken, it was early in the morning, this appointment, you know, and as I said, I was awake. And I needed to be sorting myself out. But I thought, I better not, because I've got to go to this thing. And I went there. And I had it, you know, you have the fallback ready in your pocket. Spectacles case was the one I used to have. Always ready, fully loaded, a 1 mil, ready to go. Emergency. And we've spent about 40 minutes with him going woozer, woozer at me. And even he's had the good grace to say, I'm not sure that you're being that receptive at the moment. Let's have a cup of tea and a break and we'll try again. Well, of course, I nipped off. As you do. And I sorted myself out, as you do. And I came back after the tea break, and I was a changed man. I was relaxed, I was chilled, receptive. Oh. And I was listening to this guy, oh, I can really see the woozer, I can see it's really working now. And I just thought, bollocks. And actually, that's what I thought most of the time, and somebody tried to help, and he sincerely tried to help, but I just, you know, I wasn't reachable. And the tragedy for me was I tried other ways to manage addiction, and I think we have a disease, I don't care where it comes from, I just need to know how to deal with it. And I've had to learn to deal with it, not because, and someone was saying, first speaker, talking about, it would be nice to be able to use recreationally. Yeah! Unfortunately, we lost that privilege. We lost that. I lost it. And no matter what combination of drugs, I could never find it. You know? And so the art of recovery for me, if anyone is new, the art of recovery is learning how to live a life, for me anyway, wherein I don't get to a point where I feel the only option is to go and use again. Because that's all I knew. That's what I did. And I haven't done that for quite a long time now. For me, it seems an age. But I never forget that I can go back. In a previous recovery, I achieved over 3 years of being clean. And I kind of, you know, I got the job, got a girlfriend, got a house, got a life. And then I got a headache. And I'd had a row with my second ex-wife pending, as it should turn out to be. Long term was never a phrase used with me in relationships. And I had a headache, and I went to 3 years clean. I went to two Nurofen Plus, and thinking, you know, I used to do loads of street drugs. I'm a hardcore junkie. Well, I'm glad, isn't it? I took two Nurofen Plus, and within 20 minutes, and I was sulking in isolation in the bedroom, as my resentments will get to me, which wasn't a good look 5 months into a new marriage, has to be said. Even I could see there were problems. she's good. And I had these pills, and within 20 minutes, there was the old, oh, hello. That felt nice. And for me, you know, we talk about, oh, I want to take the edge off, wouldn't it be nice to use recreationally? Yeah, maybe. But actually, with me, you know, it's like the analogy I like to use. It's like being in a house with all the electrical appliances, fridges, cookers, lights, irons, TVs, radios, record players. And you think to yourself, oh, I just want to put the bedside light on for a little read. And you put the bedside light on and every appliance in the house just goes off. And that's what my using was like. It was like the Blue Saturday for Stand Well Back. And within a week, I opened up my briefcase. I had a job, obviously. A job where I wore a tie, I might add. But within a week, I was opening up the briefcase. There were packets, 10 packets of Nurofen Plus. And I could go, who are you kidding? And I thought, this is the classic thing. My way of thinking to deal with this was, oh, well, obviously this is a bit borderline. Not totally spiritual. I certainly wasn't sharing about it in the meeting I was secretary of at the time. I think I was also the area rep for Southwest area. I sat at Region. I had timed my relapse quite well, actually. I had a cheque for £1,000. No, cash for £1,000 as a donation to give to Region. It will get delivered. This was many years ago. Part of the reparation process of the Step 8 and 9 means that the fellowship is on my list, as it should be. I'm delaying, obviously, as long as I can on that one. But it's coming. It's in the post. Within 4 months of taking 2 Nurofen Plus, I was in jail for burgling my best friend's house. I had all the knowledge of some time in recovery, the step work that I'd done. It was irrelevant in the face of active addiction. It consumed me. And within 4 months, to be banged up. Oh. I still didn't ask for help. If anyone's new, the biggest key to this whole gig is just saying help. And if you say help to another addict or a room full of people in Narcotics Anonymous, your life will change. Mine has. But I hadn't yet believed I couldn't stop or control it myself. And I went into a spiral. Relapse, there's lots of talk about relapse, and then people say it symbolises our disease. It's like having sex with a gorilla, really. Might seem like a good idea at the time, but it's not you that's going to say when to stop. And it took me all the way down. And the real damage was in that those people that had loved and supported me at that time had to watch. They had to see it. And the pain that I caused my children, to my parents, I can't give them back that time. I can't give them back that peace of mind. I have to resolve that somehow. And I've managed to forgive myself through the process of working a 12-step program, through the fourth and fifth step. I've managed to reconcile myself to who I was and what I became. And what I became is actually terrifying, because, you know, I used to baffle my parents and my sort of family and friends. I know you're sitting there thinking it too. I can see it in your faces. You know, this guy's well educated, he's tall, he's good looking, obviously. He speaks well, all these advantages in life. Why do you do this? And I have pointed out to everyone that having all these advantages was certainly no help in Peckham at 4 a.m. trying to score crack. I say! Could you? I spent a lot of time with my trousers around my ankles, and I wish I hadn't said that. Yeah. I'm very aware that this is being recorded.
being searched for listening devices.
This is the trouble with the fellowship. If you get on board, you start to be... You start to reveal yourself as you really are. And I'm quite... obviously still nuts, but... you know, I went to any lengths. I went to any lengths to get those drugs. And I ended up... I ended up living not far from here in a skip. behind Dean Street. I do like to tell everyone it was a convertible skip. It had a rag top. And... it wasn't really what I was born to, and I was living, supporting a drug habit now, nicking chicken wings out of Sainsbury's, basically, you know, jar of big potatoes. Oh yeah, and I had a mate, an oppo, you know, who I'd met in yet another detox or whatever, who had a sort of spider web tattoo across half his face, not discreetly done, I might say. And he wore beer mat trousers, or trousers made out of beer mats, and I was wearing the same clothes that I was wearing. I'd worn them for 6 months. So hygiene, well, not a lot of flushing facilities in skips in this part of London. It may be different in other parts of London. I imagine they probably do have taps and things in Richmond, but not here in the West End. And the insanity was that we, you know, I couldn't stop thinking that using drugs was my answer. Because, you know, I was this isolated feral junkie. I know I've got to sort of wrap it up, but I've got to just say that the guy sitting with you today is loyal to his friends. Consistent with my children, and I'm very much in their lives. You know, I am not the guy that decided, oh, we need to cut out the middleman, we need to rob a bank. You know, my training for this had been stealing chicken wings out of Sainsbury's for months, and I thought I'd upscale. And Dell and I decided it was a Thursday gyro day. We hadn't had to put ourselves on offer, and we were off our heads. And it seemed like such a good idea. It was Thursday afternoon. Oh, we'll rob a bank. We weren't going to do anything big, and there was not going to be drilling. It was going to, you know, scribble bits out of the tills. You know, that was the theory. And anyway, by the time we got our act together, it was Sunday morning. And not a lot of banks open on a Sunday morning. So I then utterly convinced that, oh, we'll do this. I tried to disguise him and I as part of a Portuguese cleaning crew. And we've already established I have problems fitting in. Being 6'4" with my accent did not go down well with the Portuguese cleaning crew. And I ended up robbing these people. And it all kicked off and I got nicked it was on the King's Road, and it all went off. And the police thought it was Christmas. And I'd redefined meat trading in the southwest, we knew that. They had me, and I was in Wandsworth, back inside, just broken. To be honest, it was an upgrade, and you know, whatever. I'd had, still nursing a drug habit, but I found it quite easy to get drugs in prison. Not so easy to pay for them, my dad. And took a beating where most of my teeth were kicked out of my head, and I left them on the yard as a souvenir. And when I came into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I had about 6 teeth in my head. A really wonderful person. I walked into this meeting, my first week clean, and he went, "You need to get some fucking teeth." Thank you, Rusty. And he was right, and he put me in touch with his dentist. I was his dentist's Christmas bonus that year. I got these new teeth. And I practiced with these teeth everywhere I went. I was so proud. And I got very into the habit of going to the same meetings regularly, which I think is a good thing to do. So people were getting to know me. Hi. Oh, hi. Hey, Anthony, hi. Yo. Hey. And I thought, I better get a sponsor. Hi. And I went up to him, hey, how would you like to sponsor me? And he went, no. Why? You're fine. And I learned something really important. what I presented to the world was still this mask with some very nice teeth. And I did something which changed my life. I rang him up, I swallowed my pride, and I rang him up and I said, "Can you explain to me, please, why did you say no?" And he said, "Because the guy that asked me would I sponsor him was a guy that turns up every week, works the room, smiles, the girls like him, the boys like him, he hangs out, he's cool, he's happening. This is not the guy that was living in a skip, went through 21 treatment centres, 4 jail terms, abandoned 2 wives and 3 children, and could not stay clean. That's the guy I can help." And I never forgot that conversation. And so I continually talk to people in the rooms, not always my sponsor. I've made some really good friends. And I've dealt with stuff that I didn't believe I would be able to do. You know, and I'm in this sort of step 8 and 9 process at the moment. And this will come as a shock to a lot of people. This is a current thing that's going on with me, just to bring it up to date. I have not always been entirely honest. I know, it's hard to imagine in a pink gingham shirt. I could be anything other than a nice young man. There was a bit of an overlap between where I was claiming money from the government and working for a living. And the government had found out. And I wrote to them and I explained to them, "This is what I did. I spent this period of time claiming and working. I'd like to sort it out." And I sent the letter and I went home and I went, "Oh shit, what have I done?" And I was terrified. And then I realised, I've always been frightened. I've always been frightened of being found out. So, what does it matter? Whatever is going to happen is going to happen. I can do my bit. You know, I'm learning, my reaction to stimuli is to run and to hide, and to lie and to cheat. My response with a 12-step program is to take the action that is quickest going to make reparation and sort it out for me. And the irony is, while they debate whether or not they want to prosecute me, I got a check yesterday from my local council saying, "Oh, we know everyone's having a bit of a hard time. Here's 50 quid to help you out." Do I cash the check? I don't know the answer to that. It's sitting on my bedside table, winking at me. Because I'm not sure that I should take it. I want to, but I'm not sure. So I still struggle with being honest. I still struggle with being me. But I don't use drugs. I've got to wrap this up, I think. Why don't I use drugs? It's as simple as this. I work a 12-step program, sometimes better, sometimes worse, but I use it as my lodestone, my point of reference. It has taught me to love again. It's given me the courage to dare, to try and work, to be there for my children, to be there for my girlfriend, to make decisions that I will follow through on. It's given me so many areas of my life to work a program in. When I came in, my main concern was, am I going to sleep tonight? Am I going to be all right? You know, I have been all right for a little while now. And as I've become all right in different areas, I get the opportunity to work different elements of the program in my life. You know, and I'm not just Radcliffe an addict. I'm Radcliffe a recovering addict. I'm Radcliffe a father. And my kids are loving. All their friends call me Papa Rad. And that suits my ego very well. Papa Rad is back. Papa Rad is real. Papa Rad delivers. Actually, Papa Rad is a sort of mobile ATM and taxi service really, to my teenage children, who I am so proud of, and I feel so privileged. And, you know, there are people in this room who know them, know me. And the thing that I take away every day when I go to bed from whatever's been happening in my day is that the people, some of whom I've met once, some of whom I've heard on a tape, some whose experience I read in a book or a pamphlet, the people in Narcotics Anonymous gave my children back their dad. I love you for that. You know, we give back. That's what being part of the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous does in the world. If anyone's questioning, "Oh, what's the point of Friday night? I don't want to listen to anyone bang on about themselves." I feel like that too tonight. You know, I'm lucky. You don't get to talk back. But I've never forgotten that when I came in broken, when I came in frightened, when I came in hurting, people took time out to share their lives with me, to share their time and their experience. And for as long as people have done that, as long as I've kind of copied them, the lazy man's way to recovery, do what somebody else does. Find out what the people are doing and just follow them. It works. And my life has blossomed, it's grown, it's rich. It has its frightening moments, it has its wondrous moments, it has its calm moments, it has its hectic moments. But it's ongoing. It's not Groundhog Day. I'm not looking forward to another detox. I'm not looking forward to going back to jail. I'm looking forward to settling my accounts, to going forward and living in a way that, for me, is my mantra, which is, I want to leave people feeling enriched for having spent time with me, not depleted, because I was good at that, leaving you feeling depleted. That was what I was good at. And people have given to me, I will continue to take it, and I hope I give it back. Thank you for letting me share.